The underdog is howling.
This is Stanford Steve and the Bear.
Ah, yes. A home team getting points. What's better than that?
Welcome in. It's the Sweet 16 edition of Stanford Steve and the Bear. Bear, I know that people can't see this, but I can because I can see you. We look like we got some furniture in the new crib. How we doing?
We're doing well. The our furniture from the old place has moved on over, with the exception of we did order a new bedroom set and some bedroom stuff just because we have a new bedroom to fill. But that's a little bit on back order. So we're going to be without that for a little while. But yeah, everything else has made the journey over. So we're good. Everything's in here. So we're happy. We're comfortable. And life is, it's amazing how much more space we have. It's great.
Be careful with the back orders. Our new living room set only took 7 months to get in to our new house. So
we ordered, careful. We ordered late February. It was, we were a little late on it, and they told us June.
So okay.
So we're looking at about four or five months. We're good.
Buckle up.
Yep.
All right. Before we get into the games, we'll obviously have thoughts on all the games coming up and moving forward. We'll talk some futures, winners of regions, and all that good stuff. But just looking back, Bear, a couple things just stuck out to me. Obviously, the Big Ten conversation has happened, about them having half of the ones and twos, and now them only having one team left overall. The Big 12 also, who I thought the top tier teams, I thought they would have more teams in the Sweet 16 when the bracket came out than anyone else, and they have as many as the Big 10 now. So there's all that. Obviously, the Pac-12 love for the Cougars. But I just want to start, and I hate to be negative, but I just want to start
You don't hate to be negative. No, you don't.
I do, because this is a time of year where it's tough. Scott talked about on the SV pod about how he hates the end, and so many teams, basically all of them, end with a loss, and it's tough. It's tough to see. His saying is one shining moment is for two teams, and mostly they only show the one that won, and there's other teams sitting in there. But I just want to go back to general thoughts, because I know we talked about this. I was against every single one of teams from the Mountain West, and again, they just don't show up. I talked about how, conference championship weekend, the week before that, all those teams are scattered across the bubble. All they had to do was win a couple games, and everyone just continued to lose. San Diego State finally beat Utah State in the conference tournament. They both get in, and they don't show up. It's really hard for me to start taking that conference seriously until they start winning some games. And listen, I watched the conference. I thought the conference tournament was going to be the most interesting of a lot because of all those teams there, and all of them faltered. And as that started to go on, I'm like, you know what? I see these teams. Lenardi still had them on the bubble. I wanted more to get in because I was going to go against them. And it just, I love the Syracuse matchup. I love the Texas Tech matchup against Utah State. I know you had took a shot on Utah State to go to Sweet 16. I just, that Mountain West is really a big thumbs down for me, looking back at the first weekend.
You're right. So going back now since 2015, Mountain West teams are 2-8 in the first round of the tournament, and six of the eight losses have come by at least 11 points, and they've lost games by 9, 16, and 17 as favorites. And that Utah State collapse was hard to watch because it looked like they were in good shape up. I think they were up six and McClung went to the bench, and then they just stopped scoring. But you're right. And I want to add another old Mountain West whack team to that group too, and that's BYU. The next time I see a Mountain West team or BYU with like a number like six or better next to their seed, like what are you doing? These, for whatever reason, these teams, and I'm a little surprised it actually happened. This, we talked about it last week, like BYU was the most overseeded team in the tournament, and it proved to be that way. But I thought maybe we'd get a little bit truer seed line this year because you didn't have to geographically protect teams in pods, and I thought that might eliminate teams like BYU and San Diego State being like on that sixth line, and they might be closer to 7-8, but it didn't, and it showed. The big like storyline to me is just, we talked about how Texas was on the do not trust list, and what we saw from Texas against Abilene Christian is exactly why they should have been on the do not trust list. Everything that anyone could have potentially been concerned with and worried about with Texas played out that night. And I think you could maybe make a case. I mean, obviously UMBC 16 blowing out a one is always going to be the biggest upset. Virginia, the only one to lose a first round game, going to be the worst loss. But this is, after that, I think by far the worst loss by any team in the tournament. And I think maybe you can make a case that performance by Abilene Christian might have been like the worst performance ever to win a game. I mean, you look at like the 14s, 15s, and 16s that have won games, and our buddy Dan Weyer, who used to work with us, put together a lot of great statistics on his blog. And I'm just reading it right off of him.
He's a Texas fan too, by the way.
Yes, he is a Texas fan, Texas alum. But he's usually pretty rational about it. Which is amazing. But he went through, of the 32 upset winners from 14, 15, and 16 that won, Abilene Christian's offensive performance was the worst of anyone to pull off an upset. Their field goal percentage was 30%, 29.9, which was the worst. They had the second fewest field goals, 20. Tied for the second fewest three-point field goals, 3. Tied for the worst three-point field goal percentage, 16.7. Their two-point field goal percentage in that game was 34.7%. Like, you go back to that Hampton, Iowa State 215 game.
That's
Hampton
who I think 50, of.
Hampton shot 53% from two-point range. So that was more about a slow down, a pace, and Hampton just made shots. But, like, this is just – it was an incredible, awful performance by Texas. And, like, it was even more apparent in watching Abilene Christian against UCLA. Like, you're sitting there and, like, how the hell did Texas lose to this team? A completely inexcusable loss. And I actually do feel for Texas fans and having to sit through and stomach that, even though I did have Abilene Christian, which plus the points, which worked out well.
Wow. You agree with the foul call?
Yes, I think it was a foul. It was with the body. I get the people who say, oh, the refs can't decide that. But it was a foul. It impeded the shot. It had to be called. And you know what? Make a couple shots on the other end and don't turn the ball over 23 times. Don't have 23 turnovers and like 19 field goals. And that doesn't even come into play.
I agree with that assessment. I didn't agree with the foul call, but I will say this, and this is big, especially now. And it all comes down whether you got the spread, your team's to advance, end of game situations. And Abilene Christian doesn't get enough credit for this, because this is what they did. They went early. Why do you go early? To get a chance at an offensive rebound on a miss. And look what happened. They got the benefit of the doubt. They got the whistle. Most importantly, their guy came through and made the free throw. So that's what I have to credit them with, that, because you watch so much instances, and I'm not trying to bring Bucknut into this, but, you know, Dwayne Washington Jr. made a living all year on this, and it turned out to burn him at the end, along with a bunch of missed free throws. Ohio State, I really, you know, when you go back and look at, I think, O'Banner, if you're going to make an all-tournament team right now, the kid for Oral Roberts, I think he's first team. What he's done, it goes back to the semifinals in the conference tournament. He has a tip-in at the buzzer where they beat the one seed in their conference tournament. They're the four, and they get in. They win the tournament. But I think about Young, the kid that was out for Ohio State, who's a glue guy to me, maybe one of the best athletes on the roster, and who would have totally been a different factor in there, because he would have guarded O'Banner. But that's the stuff that happens. You got to survive. I mean, look at Michigan. Michigan goes through and gets it done without Livers.
I'm glad you mentioned that. The same thing with Villanova. Like, that was – I loved seeing – and it just goes to show, like, the the coaching job and the culture and the camaraderie and the team building that Jay Wright and Juwan Howard like put together, like for those two teams to perform to the level that they did. And that was a big boy game between LSU and Michigan the other night. And for them to overcome that and get down and come, but unbelievable job by both the Villanova and Michigan. And that's a testament to their programs as a whole.
And as we spin this forward, I think, you know, just a thought on the Pac-12, everybody's off of their thoughts. I had a thought about the conference play, and I brought it back to college football. And I say, everybody takes their shot at the Pac-12. You know, they were the only conference that played 9 conference games for a while. And it would always be like, how do they lose to a conference game on the road? And I'm like, well, you know, when I see the Big Ten trying to make an excuse where the 20-game conference schedule was too tough, like, you can't use that argument anymore.
Yeah.
You took shots – at the Pac-12 forever, and you know what? It just bothered me because you never the team that won the game never got credit for the Pac-12. It was always like, oh, another top team in the Pac-12 goes down. Well, we also look at some non-conference games that happened all across sports, and no one ever wants to come out west. So, you guys can, you know, go home and watch your Michigan. I know Ohio State's not rooting for Michigan, but guess what? They're the only team rooting for there. So that's that. I want to start. I know the games are later, but let's just start at the top of the bracket with the West as we spin this forward. And obviously, there's Gonzaga and Creighton, and then USC and Oregon. To me, when we look at this Gonzaga Creighton game, I look at what Gonzaga did to Oklahoma. I really thought Oklahoma did a really good job of trying to go at Gonzaga, but this is where it comes down to play. And I think about the idea of having to score consistently. And too many times you saw these teams that lost. I mean, I think of Illinois, for example, who I thought the game was over at the under 12 timeout in the first half, but they just kept going timeout to timeout and they couldn't get into the lead. You cannot go these TV timeout to TV timeouts and not get a dent into the lead or, I mean, score 4 points. And to me, Oklahoma shoots 50% and they just can't get there. They can't get there. And I thought Sean Farnham did a great job coming on after with Scott Monday night and just talking about the idea of Gonzaga Gonzaga, how the right way to say it.
Exactly right.
Is, you know, they have Corey Kispert, who's the player of the year, but when they need a hoop, they go inside to Timmy. And that showed, I mean, he was sensational against Oklahoma. They told the story on the broadcast about how Oklahoma really wanted him. And, you know, he gave it to him. But to me, seeing Oklahoma, who I'll tell you right now, a month ago, I put them and Creighton in the conversation. About a month, 6 weeks ago, I was thinking those two teams were Final Four worthy. I mean, Oklahoma had two great wins without Reeves. They get him back. They lose some heartbreakers to Oklahoma State. And then they just lost a little bit. But I like the personnel, love Kruger. And then I put Creighton in that realm too, because obviously they had the incident in the locker room. They didn't look well in the Big East tournament, but that's a credit to the players, man. They got it together. You know, they played two underseeded teams, but now here's the big boy game. And I worry about them being able to score consistently. I worry about what they have inside. I love Bishop, but that's basically all they have inside there. And I don't think they could score consistently enough with Gonzaga. And you had the stat, right? Gonzaga's the biggest favorite in the Sweet 16 since Kentucky gave it to West Virginia when that kid was hiding in the bathroom when I think he guaranteed a win.
Yeah.
But I it's tough. I don't want to lay that many points. I always go back to the Duke Indiana game in 2002, which was this round.
That's the biggest Sweet 16 up to 13.
Yeah, and that was a big one. That one still stings. And I think of that game all the time because you got to be your best. Indiana played their best that night. Obviously, Duke got a chance with the free throws. But this is more about Gonzaga. And I don't want anything to do with the spread. I don't like the over-under. I just think if Gonzaga plays their game, they don't have any issues with Creighton.
Yeah, I would agree. This is maybe a Gonzaga tease, Gonzaga in a money line parlay or something. It's a lot, but maybe even in game, maybe you get fortunate. Maybe Creighton scores a couple points early, and maybe you can the first TV timeout, maybe you're only laying 11 and a half or 12 or something like that. So I think in terms of the spread for me, I'll probably wait and try and get something down in game, but I'll probably look at some type of a Gonzaga teaser, Gonzaga money line parlay, something there.
And I don't want anything to do with totals in a Gonzaga game because they are that scary. I mean, that's 158. That's high. I do want to talk about the other high over under, which I do have a side in, and that's on Saturday's games. But let's stay here in the West. Oregon, UCLA.
I love this game.
You
love
do?
This game.
Go ahead. The floor is yours.
No. I don't love the game to bet on it. I love the game to watch. I mean, I know we're more of a, we try to look at more of the betting angles and stuff, but yeah. And then I am you and Bucknut are more the NBA guys than me, but there really are people out there that are taking Cade Cunningham ahead of Mobley or Suggs.
Yeah, including our number one draft expert, Mr. Schmitz.
Okay. Is it Mobley, like, at this stage of his development, isn't he like Chris Bosh, basically?
The scary thing is he keeps getting better and better. And he started making threes in the Pac-12 tournament. It's like, whoa, like, that was just something you didn't see all year. You knew the potential was there. But the other guys, you know, his brother, Edie, is sensational. They didn't have – I mean, I will say this. They shot the lights out against Kansas. They haven't had too many games where I want to say they made over 10 or 12 threes. I mean, they were incredible. But I do want to –
defensively, they're so damn good.
Yeah. Good luck getting something off at the rim. Yeah, no doubt. On the other side, I mean, I don't know what else to say about Altman. I try and talk about him as much as possible because he's done very well for me financially and backing him this time of year, whether it's in conference play or the NCAA tournament. But I do, you know, I watched that game. It was a weird makeup game. It was a Monday night. They only played once this year. And USC was up 17-1 in that game. I think it got to 19-5. And Oregon just couldn't get back, couldn't do anything consistently. And you factor that in with what Oregon did against Iowa. And they just said, and this is another Altman, just like, you know, you wonder what, you know, you might – try and do to slow down Iowa. You know, you like to play up tempo. He just said, we're better than you and we're going to outscore you. We got better athletes. And we're going to count on scoring more than you. You go ahead and play your style. And I thought it was absolutely genius. The way they attacked and they got some killers there. Duarte, when he's on, Richardson, you name it. This is going to be, you said, a fantastic game. Athletes all over the place. And I actually thought the over-under on this one would be higher. And I get the rematch significance in three into the total. But I'm with you. If this – it's 2.5. If this creeps to 3, I got to start thinking Oregon here because of – I don't know how to – you know, do you call it the recency bias because of going off of the last you saw? I mean, I'm guilty. I know I have it with Loyola right now. Like, I don't think that's the number one, you know, Sharpie into the next round for me is Loyola, and we'll get to that. But, I mean, Oregon looked as good as they could. I just – Kansas, I don't know how much I know everybody wants to point at, you know, how many points they lost by and this and that, but that was just USC play. If USC plays against Gonzaga, they're going to beat Gonzaga. There's no doubt. They'll win four more. So it's a fantastic matchup. It's a shame that – the conference champions is going to lose one going into that game.
Just something about the Pac-12, but it's probably better to talk about it leading into UCLA Alabama than anything else. And,
okay, let's do it.
I applaud the Pac-12 and what they've done is awesome. You look at everything that they've done as an underdog and 9-1 and winning games by at least blowing teams out as favorites. But I do think this might be a situation where with UCLA, Alabama, especially maybe Loyola, Oregon State, maybe not Oregon State as much, but especially UCLA, Alabama, you talk about some of the perfect draws that some of these Pac-12 teams got. Oregon got the bye into the second round because VCU had the COVID. Then they got an Iowa team, which just couldn't defend. Mm-hmm. I mean, USC got a terrible team in Drake, and then they blew. They did their part, blowing out Kansas. I'm not gonna dilly-dally on that. But I mean, you have a UCLA. They get a Michigan State collapse. They get the most overseeded team in the tournament on BYU, and then they get Abilene Christian, who's like the worst team ever to win a tournament game. That's a pretty fortuitous path here. I think they are. If there was one game I was willing to be step out here in the Sweet 16 and lay it pretty good, I think Alabama is probably that team. And normally I don't like playing back teams that shoot the lights out from three the way Alabama did against Maryland. Sorry for your Maryland money line.
That
never really
had a feeling. Went off the cuff on that one. Yeah, my surroundings are getting the most of me. I blame it. But I own it. I own it.
That's okay. Too much local knowledge, but that's fine. But I think UCLA, they played great. But I think here, the way Alabama plays defense and their ability to get points from different players, this is going to be a very, very hard game for UCLA to win. And I'd be surprised if Alabama doesn't win this game by double digits.
Okay. All right, no matter what the public goes, because I could see this thing's going to keep going up. It flashed at 4.5 as soon as it opened, and it was gone. And now it's the 6.5. This
I got it at 5.5 already.
So. Okay. All right. This one feels very public to me. And I will say about UCLA, and it's a credit to Mick Cronin, he's gone away from his ways of playing limited possessions and mucking it up against, you know, other teams when he was at Cincinnati. He's adapted, and he deserves a ton of credit. I do think they deserve credit for coming back against Michigan State because they were able to put the ball in the basket. And that's,
sure,
you know, when you come back, you got to do that. And I think they found themselves there. They're going to be probably the most picked against team in this round besides Oregon State. I think Oregon State.
I think more people will be up. I mean, I would imagine in terms of outright win, no one's going to pick Oral Roberts to beat Arkansas.
All right. They had them. They had them earlier in the year. Just pointing that out. We'll get there. But I see. Cronin can't be sleeping much after watching that Alabama effort against Maryland. Yeah. Maryland's not a great team, but they are really good defensively, and they just got diced up. And when that ball's going in the hoop and there's three guys on the court at once for Alabama, all taking heat checks, you're in trouble because it's just an ambush style of basketball. And it's incredible to watch because I keep saying it feels like they have seven guys on the floor, whether it's defense or offense. And they make you scramble. So I totally see where you're coming from. It's a stay away for me because I think the public is going to be so much. It's a lot like UCLA against Michigan State, where we saw that pie chart on Daily Wager when it was 95-5 percentage, which made me jump on UCLA. And that's probably a key number, I would say, 95-5. But the other game in that region is probably the most interesting to me because of the capability of both teams. And you mentioned Michigan, and they took haymaker after haymaker from LSU. And that's, to me, where they really you really see how good they are because they could withstand that because they have multiple guys that could score. They spread you out. They got the big guy. Their guards have been absolutely phenomenal this year. And then you got Florida State, who I know everybody wants to point out to different things in the region. I think Leonard Hamilton did the best job coaching to get to the Sweet 16, knowing what they had to overcome. You start your tournament as a double-digit favorite against a team who's scrappy, and you know they have a good player in Isaiah Miller with UNC Greensboro, and you can't make a three-pointer, and you still go on to win by double digits.
Yep.
That shows me a lot, man. That really does, because you've seen plenty of times where teams just get flustered and keep chucking. And that was not the case with Florida State. He did a great job of coming in at Colorado in the Colorado game. Colorado gets it down to a one-point game. He comes out of a timeout, gets an alley-oop dunk, and they never look back from there. They got guys that are going to challenge shots at the rim. I do think they have some guys that'll frustrate things from Dickinson. But I just think it's a trust factor with Michigan, man. They've proved it time in and time out. I think Wagner is a monster. I think he's the most underrated player in the tournament, and I really think he's going to show out here. Shawnee Brown stepping in, getting more minutes as Livers is out, really showed me a lot. This is going to be another high level game, and what Michigan showed me to withstand that LSU fury and to come back and still win was really, really impressive. So I have Michigan here. I know, and it's down to 2.5. So that shows you what people think of Florida State.
Yeah, Florida State is going to be a very attractive underdog for a lot of people, just based on Hamilton's ability to get teams ready to play as an underdog role. It's kind of a gamble on if you think Isaiah Livers is going to come back and play, right?
I don't think they're planning on him coming back. I really don't. And you can't if you can't say I like Michigan because they're getting Livers back. You can't do that because
What I was going to say is I think you can try and kind of guess which way this number is going to go, because obviously if he does come back, this number is going to go from 2.5 to 4.5. I would think people, the Michigan money will probably start coming in. So I would agree with you. I think it's a Michigan play would be my play for me. And if he does come back, then you at least, at the very least, know you're going to get the best of the number. So I would be on Michigan here, because I think they have more offensive answers at times than Florida State does. And as much as I love and respect Leonard Hamilton and this Florida State team, I'd be on the Wolverines here.
Okay, we agree. Michigan was minus, I think, like 105.
I have Michigan and my site has Michigan and Alabama both plus 145.
Wow. Okay. That's the game I want to see in the Elite Eight. That would be absolutely fantastic. And to me, that would come down to the idea of Alabama playing the way they do. Is it sustainable? Because now you're getting into that ring. I didn't pick them to win the championship because I didn't think it's sustainable for 6 straight games. And now when you get to that 4th game and you're playing a 1 seed, that's where you're going to really find your true colors. I would still lean I think I still lean Michigan in that game, because I think they could frustrate Alabama enough. That would be a ton of pressure on Michigan's guards, knowing what Quinterly and Shackelford could do when they get things cooking. So that's a fantastic matchup if it can happen. I think it's a toss-up game, but I would tend to go with the balance of Michigan in there. You mentioned the prices on Michigan and Alabama. What do you have for Florida State to win that region?
275
because that was 850 before the tournament started. So
yeah, this is a spot that I don't think that's a good price. I would much rather just money line Florida State the 2 games. You're going to get much better than 275 or whatever you did.
That's why you're here for the math.
Exactly right.
All right, Saturday's games. Let's go with the first one. 240 Oregon State, Loyola.
Here's the region stuff too. Sorry to go, just start off. Like, I was surprised that Houston was favored in this region. Like, I mean, you can certainly make a case that they have been the least impressive team of the 4 that are left. I was surprised that they were even money, and Loyola was like plus 180 or so to win this region, and even Syracuse at around plus 600 or so. Nothing here would surprise me. Any of these 4 teams could win this region, and I wouldn't be shocked.
But Oregon State, I
wouldn't be shocked.
Wow,
would you be shocked based on what they've done the first 2 games? I mean, completely blowing out Tennessee, and then coming out and getting a big lead on Oklahoma State and taking their punches and holding on. But yeah, I actually attacked this. I took my double-edged sword here, and I'm hoping to get 2 whacks potentially at Houston in worst-case scenario. I took Syracuse and Loyola to win the region, and if one of them winds up winning, then I come out ahead. But I just don't think Houston should be a significant favorite to win this, especially with the injury stuff that they have, team that – I think they're going to struggle to score points against Syracuse as well. Mm-hmm. I don't get it. So I probably made the only 2 plays that I will make at least pre tip. with Loyola and Syracuse to win the region. And then we'll see what the games bring us.
All right. I grabbed Loyola at plus 140 to win the region. I think this is a nightmare matchup for Oregon State. I do find it really interesting to see how high this line is. But I still don't want any part of Oregon State. It just shows me how much the guys making the lines think of Loyola. All power to them. That was the most impressive win to me in the tournament thus far, of just how they did it. And they just continued to just slap Illinois around. They couldn't do anything. They took them out of everything. And I've never seen a team that just wants to make you look uncomfortable as much as they do. They get in the air. They put Krautwig all over the place, and he just dices you up from where it's the high post, the low post. And it's fascinating to me. The game I want to see is them against the zone, because I think that's the only way you could beat Loyola. I really do, because you got to clog things up. And when you play man, they do such a good job of spreading it out and moving him around that he becomes like a point center, and now they're getting open shots. So to me, I want to see that game. I don't know if we're going to get there, but I do like Loyola in that game. And then you mentioned Houston. I like the under in that game. I like the first half under in Syracuse and Houston also, just because I think it's going to take some feeling out for Houston. Listen, nobody plays harder than them. You saw them fight all the way to the end, as Giroux's hobbling it around, but he still gets to the rim. They win the game on an offensive rebound, and that's just effort stuff, man. They do a great job. They were a big question mark for me coming into the tournament, because I didn't want to take anything away from them, but I just really didn't think the American was good at all. But I watch Houston a ton, and I love the way they play. I love everything about them, and they play together, and they play their asses off on defense. But to me, is does the panic set in? I thought Reese Davis did a great job on game day talking about how Boeheim does a great job, because he actually wants those teams early on to shoot those threes and see them going in, so they do get a little complacent and thinking they can make threes all night long. But of any underdog on the board, I think Syracuse has the best chance to win the game.
I would agree with that.
Yeah, right?
I'm totally with you there.
Okay.
And you talked about Loyola. If you follow KenPom, there were two like blatant underseeded teams. If you want to compare KenPom to the tournament seed, USC is sixth in KenPom. They're a sixth seed. Hmm. Loyola is a ninth in KenPom. They're an eighth seed. So, like, I guarantee you there are probably a lot of people out there who had a lot of success this past weekend betting USC, betting Loyola in games where you weren't really laying a lot of points. What, USC was, what, a six-point favorite against Drake in the virtual toss-up game against Kansas? Loyola was a six-point favorite over a shorthanded Georgia Tech team, and then a dog against Illinois. Like, I guarantee you there are people out there that made hay USC and Loyola solely based on the KenPom numbers as compared to what the NCAA seed was.
Great point. I just think about how close we were to Loyola being the lowest seeded team, or I should say highest seeded team, with that Rutgers Houston ending, and how much more of a favorite they would be if Rutgers was playing Syracuse in that second round. That would be pretty eye opening. All right, let's go up to the South. That makes sense. Not really. Villanova and Baylor's 5:15 Eastern Saturday. To me, to see Baylor in the game right after Illinois gets debacled, to come out and do what they do made me even more sure of them. And Wisconsin's a pain in the ass to play. We all know that. But Baylor just could – I mean, Meyer was incredible off the bench on how he just is fearless and taking over the ball handling and firing shots. And we saw the alley-oop to Vital that really sent things home. But this is I mentioned it yesterday. This is a game where I'd love for like a 24/7 to follow Villanova around this week to see what Jay Wright does in his great mind of trying to piece together a game plan to go at Baylor, because we know they're an undermanned without Gillespie, but you know he's not backing down. And I feel like he loves this kind of situation where is Baylor great, you know, down on the post defensively? Not really. Vital's awesome, but he's undersized. And, you know, does Robinson Earl go down on the block? And do they run the offense through him, you know, the way Villanova plays, you know, one in and four out? It's a fascinating matchup to me. I just don't think I obviously think Villanova needs Baylor not to be on their A game, because they can't beat them if Baylor's on there. I don't think anybody in the country beats Baylor if they're on their A game. So to me, this is the toughest matchup for a team. And I would be really, really surprised if Baylor lost this game.
Yeah, Villanova just doesn't defend the three very well time to time. So like in Baylor has what, five to six different guys who can shoot it. So I think that matchup really doesn't bode well for Villanova. The only thing I did here was I played over 138.5, just expecting it to go.
Okay.
Into the mid and up, maybe the mid 140s, and if I want to have myself potentially a 6 or 7 point middle, then that's probably what I looked at. But I thought at the very least 138.5, I thought was really low for two teams that like to shoot the three and probably will have a very high success rate shooting the three. So I played over at the start. It's up to like 141 now. So I don't know how much higher I'd play it. But yeah, this is going to be. I'm just so happy for Villanova to get to the Sweet 16.
No doubt.
They were Final Four type team with the healthy full team, and to see them come together and get two really impressive wins, and now face a Baylor team that game against Wisconsin was great for them.
Mm-hmm.
Just that was what I wasn't sure they had in them. They hadn't really shown that since the coming back from the COVID break. And for them to do that bodes really well if you're a Baylor fan.
Yeah, I agree. I've said all along I thought I have Baylor winning this tournament. And, you know, I thought, you know, it's obviously they've been compared to Gonzaga a ton this year. And both of them in the round of 32 really showed me a lot, because they took some shots. Wisconsin to Baylor and as we touched on with Oklahoma to Gonzaga. So, I say it all the time. This is the time of year you want to see teams play well. And I don't think Baylor has an issue as long as they do play well. And then the other game in that one is the 3 versus the 11, Arkansas and Oral Roberts. They did play earlier this year. I'm trying to get the date on that, Rob, before Christmas. Arkansas erases a 19-point deficit in the second half. I think it was a 10-point game at half, and then I think before he had to call a timeout before the under 16, and they were down 19. They go on to outscore, and this is the thing that scares me about Arkansas. They go on to outscore Oral Roberts 57-36 in the second half of that game. And when I look at this, looking back at that game, Arkansas was a 19.5-point favorite in that game. They ended up winning by 11. And the over-under in that game was 155. That goes over. Now the over-under is 159. And I'm going to do a miserable thing here, Bear, and like the under here. I'm going to take the under.
There's nothing wrong with that.
The under in this game. I mean, the clangs and the non-bounces you get off of these steel rims in the tournament. Like, every arena has it, and it's just amazing. You just keep hearing it. Time and time again. And I just feel like the idea here of both these teams playing each other, Arkansas has not been good in the first half the last couple. I mean, they were on bad beats last night with a first half total, because them and Texas Tech combined to go scoreless the last 3 minutes of that first half, and it misses by 1 point. They did the same thing against Colgate. Now, that was more from Colgate, I think, really catching fire in the first half. But Arkansas has not been impressive to me in the first half of games. I would look at Oral Roberts first half. I would look at first half under, and I would look at the game under in this game, because I think the idea of both these teams seeing each other does play a factor in this game.
Negativity and playing unders. Now, welcome to my world. You're seeing seeing things through my prism. I love it. It's a beautiful thing. But it's interesting because you look at Oral Roberts and even Oregon State. You got two teams here that won both games in the round of 64 and the round of 32 outright as 6-point dogs. So a lot of times people want to bet against those teams, thinking the trend that's going to come to an end. But if you go back in history, the previous four teams that won their round of 64 and 32 games outright is a 6-point dog or more, and they didn't face a one seed in the Sweet 16, they all covered. I mean, I know it's not a great sample size, but it's just interesting that those four teams did back it up with another good performance, and even Dayton in 2014 beat Stanford outright. So a lot of times these teams that won games outright, they have confidence in there, and there's so much pressure on the favorites to kind of knock them out at the same time when they know that they're dangerous. So I wouldn't completely discount the underdogs potentially hanging around here. That's a big number for Oral Roberts there. Like they can score. And I know Arkansas has a very good defense, but I don't know if I'd want to lay that, because, like you said, we've seen Arkansas go into some major scoring droughts, whether it was the start of the game against Colgate, yeah, or that stretch in the second half against Texas Tech. Like, Oral Roberts might have the best player on the floor, the best scorer on the mm-hmm. floor. And that's a big number. I'll probably talk myself into getting on Oral Roberts by the time tip comes around.
No, it's really interesting, because is Arkansas's bench play a factor here? We know Oral, how much they get from Asmus and O'Banner. And I want to say Asmus was in foul trouble in that first game. I think I heard one of our analysts saying when they actually did that game. The name is blanking me right now. But I look at the opportunity to get to an Elite Eight, and both these teams are right there. And this is the games where you wonder, you know, it's just so hard to get to, you know, and Oral Roberts, you know, nobody thought they could do it against Florida again. And, you know, things didn't look well. Florida was playing well, and they just continued to grind out and fight. To me, it's outside shooting. And Arkansas can't have one of those first halves and expect to win this game. I don't think they could do it because of the firepower that Oral Roberts has. So there's a double digit seed in there, but it's a hell of an interesting game to me, knowing what Oral Roberts is capable of. Final four thoughts. Do you have anybody a favorite to win? I mean, obviously Gonzaga. Who do you think SC has a better chance to beat Gonzaga or Oregon?
Oof. SC.
Okay.
I think SC just.
Can you see SC winning four more games?
Why not? I mean, ultimately, okay, you would think if they get into a close game, maybe their inability to hit free throws. Why couldn't they?
Mm-hmm. All right.
I mean, that being that I have the under 4.5 wins by a 6-seed prop bet, I really hope they don't.
Ooh.
Get to the Final Four. I hope they got one more win and then a loss to Gonzaga, and that'll get me to 4. That was like a double edged sword for me the other day, because not only did I have the Texas Tech not to reach the Sweet 16, I had the under wins by 6 seeds. So that was like, okay, that could have been 2 death knells with one fell swoop if Texas Tech could have made a layup at the end of that game. Got a little fortunate.
Man, end of game situations. I did agree with the no call on that one, though. I didn't think there was that. The Oklahoma intentional foul, I really didn't need that one, seeing how I had the Sooners.
Yeah, people came at me on that. I get the frustration, but why foul? You're down 15 with 50 seconds left. Gonzaga's not going to take a shot.
They're going to empty the bench. It's a double-digit game.
Like, that's the only reason you would foul in a situation like that. Kind of like what Iowa did. They took the foul to get Luke Garza, Luke Garza off, to get the standing ovation, bring bench guys in. That's fine. But why are you fouling and then you're gonna put a guy at the line? You're not coming back just so you can lose by more. I didn't get that. All these people, oh, you gotta play to the final whistle. Sure, go defend him, stand there, put your arms up or whatever, and slap his arm and draw a foul. And I didn't have any interest in that game at all. It just kind of pissed me off. It's like a pet peeve of mine. I'm like, well, why are you prolonging the game? The game's over. You're not coming back from 15 down in 50 seconds.
I do want to mention this, that every time a defender falls down, we don't have to call a charge.
That's also true.
We don't have to call a charge.
See, don't have LSU.
To. You could just give the get up and play. There could be some no calls involved in there. That wouldn't be bad. Anything else before we go?
I made an NBA bet.
What?
Talking or listening. I shouldn't say talking. I wasn't talking to anybody. I was more doing the listening and the reading. I bet Dame to win MVP.
Like it. What'd you get it at?
14.
I like it. Could have used a win last night against the Nets, but we'll start from now on. Let's go Dame.
But like my rudimentary knowledge, I know like Embiid is hurt and LeBron is hurt.
They're all hurt.
The Clippers don't care, like, right?
Yeah. You better be careful. They're going to start putting you on a daily segment of Daily Wager on the daily new front runner for NBA MVP.
Oh, do we have a new – is that a new actual segment? Like every day we should be the MVP?
I mean, the way the odds are changing, it sure feels like it.
That'll be good. I'm okay. I can do that.
All right. Buckle in.
I will.
All right. Bear, take us away.
The less you bet, the more you lose when you win.